The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
Thanks for downloading this show from PC One. Before we get rolling, here's a word from one of the folks who helped bring you this podcast.
It's your last chance to get great holiday savings at Guitar Center. Like a Yamaha portable keyboard, only $79. Add a month of lessons for only $99. Plus the newest and hottest guitars, drums, keys, and more. Exclusive gear you can't get anywhere else. Special financing and gift cards, the perfect present for every musician. So hurry in and find your sound at Guitar Center. Lessons available at select locations only.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And today, one of my favorite guests and definitely my favorite tag team partner of all time returns to Talk is Jericho. Big Show is back, and it's time for another great conversation with, I think, probably the best big man in the history of the business. But he's not so big anymore. He's dropped 90 pounds. Did you hear what I said? Big Show has dropped 90 pounds, and he's got abs. I don't think I've ever known him with abs, even since I met him back in 1996. He's going to tell us what inspired him to lose the weight and, as he says, become a body guy at 44 years old. He'll also share how he did it with diet and exercise and how he's sticking to it, why he's sticking to it. We're talking about Shaq and what happened to their proposed WrestleMania match, Show's angle with Floyd Mayweather that led to a WrestleMania match. It's a great story. And, of course, his short-lived boxing career. I've never really talked to him about boxing, why he decided to do it, and then why he ultimately came back to wrestling. He's going to tell us all about that. We'll also find out why he took a body slam for a pre-SmackDown champion, Jinder Mahal, a few months ago in Champaign, Illinois. Jinder talked about it. We're going to hear Show's side of the story. It's a big, big deal, and you'll hear why and why he allowed it to happen. And you know we got to talk about The Undertaker, who was a big mentor in the early days of Show's career in the WWE. Show's also a fan of the 205 Live guys, the Cruiserweights, and Braun Strowman. Lots to talk about with Big Show, my old friend, love him like a brother, and we're going to do that. But first, I want to tell you about another guy that I love like a brother, Diamond Dallas Page. Yes, you can do DDP yoga with Dallas himself if you sign up for one of his DDP yoga workshops. He's doing more and more of them around the country. He's got one coming up June 23rd in Worcester, Massachusetts, right outside of Boston. If you want to see when he'll be doing DDP yoga at live demonstrations in your town, just go to ddpyogaworkshops.com. And you know, if you've got the DDP Yoga Now app on your phone or tablet, you can access live workouts from the DDP Yoga Performance Center in Smyrna, Georgia. And that's just one of the cool features, special features on the app. You can get nutrition and diet tips, watch cooking classes hosted by DDP, and track your progress. And of course, all the DDP yoga workouts are right there for you, so you can do DDP yoga anytime, any place, anywhere. You know the app is all I use now. I just grab my phone, open it up, and get to work on the bus, on tour, backstage in the dressing room, in my hotel room, at Download, which we're going to talk about in a few minutes. It's so easy. I just did DDP Yoga Monday after Fozzy's big Download Festival gig, which we'll mention. I'm here today recording the show in my hotel room at the Sanctum Soho in London, one of my favorite hotels in the entire world. And it's the place I always stay when I'm in London. I'm here right now as I get ready to host the Metal Hammer Award later on tonight. It's been a busy week for Y2J, but then again, when is it not? But all I was doing is DDP yoga to get over the craziness of yesterday's Download show. I feel so much better. So if you're thinking DDP yoga might be the answer for you, then take advantage of DDP yoga's latest sale. He's giving you 20% off the DDP Yoga Now app, the DDP yoga DVDs, and all DDPY related merch. All you gotta do is go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. So get started on DDP Yoga Now. Jump on this 20% off the DDP Yoga Now app and all related merch at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. 20% off hats, t-shirts, yoga mats, heart monitors, so much more. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. That's ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Change your life today. Get in the best physical and mental shape you've ever been in. Do it now. ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Yeah. All right, before we get to the big show, let's talk a little bit about the Download Festival held in Derby, England, close to Nottingham, close to Birmingham. And we've played the Download Festival four times, 2005, 2012, 2014, and 2017. And by far, the gig this weekend was the best Download appearance we've ever had. Now, the thing about it is it was our second appearance on the main stage, which is huge. You always want to be on the main stage at Download. The last time we were on the main stage, we were second on the bill at noon. This year, we were designated as the openers, and I was little bit like, well, I mean, it's going to be early and you never know, hopefully people will be there. But I think something I learned from wrestling is that the two most important matches on the show are the main event and the opening match, because the opening match sets the tone for the entire night, and that really is true. So I took it that challenged, and all of us were like, well, it doesn't matter who's out there, we'll make sure that they have a crazy time, we'll rock their socks off and set the tone for the entire day so people will remember exactly who Fozzy is. Well, I didn't have to be concerned, because when I walked out on stage at 11 a.m., there was 35,000 people in the crowd. It was crazy. There was more people there for this show. There was more people there for this show at 11 a.m. than there was for the 12 o'clock show 3 years ago. And I think that just shows the growth of the band, how much more of a buzz there is now. Obviously, I call it the Judas Effect, as you guys know. But not only was there that many people there, they were crazy. They were loud. They were nuts. They were responsive to whatever we did. We had the couple of the great girls from the Inferno. They're like a dance troupe that uses fire, and they breathe fire, and they have like, you know, the wheels of flames. And so they came and joined us on stage for Lights Go Out, which was huge. That added some ambiance to it. And then just the singing along with Eat the Rich and the chorus of Judas, everybody knew it like it was an Aerosmith song from the 70s. So it was just a great experience, and what a buzz. And obviously, you know, it was great to open it. My goal is to headline Download at some point one of these years. And that was a great step to helping people realize that we're on the way to do so. And once again, talking about the fact that so many people got up early. A lot of people from NXT were there, because NXT had some shows in Download. I saw Ember Moon. I saw Pete Dunne. I saw Aleister Black. Matt Bloom was there. Lots of people. If I forgot some of you guys, I apologize. But it was great seeing you all that morning, hanging out that early to check out Fozzy, which was very, very, very cool. And like I said, just a great experience. Didn't get a chance to see Steel Panther live, but they were there. Great guys. And there may or may not be a Steel Panther podcast coming up in the future. I did two podcasts yesterday, so there were some great ones. Let me try. Trust me on that. Did 5 hours of press, saw some old acquaintances, saw some people that have been fans of the band from the start. So it was just a great, great moment and a great, great time. And man, I love Download. It's one of my favorite festivals to play. And thanks to Andy Copping for inviting us back for the fourth time. Hopefully we'll be back again very soon in the future, higher up on the bill, deservedly so, because we don't want any favors. We want to do everything and get everything because we deserve it. And I think one of the reasons why the band has grown so much, with 5 million views on YouTube, over 5 million views now in just over 5 weeks. Let's check out the song. This is paving the way to take Fozzy to the next level. Here's Judas right here on Talk is Jericho.
You are beautiful on the inside. You are innocence personified. And I will track you down and sell you out. Run away. I am cold like December snow. I have carved out this soul made of stone. And I will drag you down and sell. By demons I fight. What have I become? Now
there you go. Judas just going crazy for us. Rock radio is picking it up. If you live in the United States and there's a rock radio station near you, request Judas. A lot of them are playing them already. And that leads us to the Fozzy European Tour later on this year with Hardcore Superstar, huge band out of Sweden. And this is going to be a very, very cool tour. It kicks off October 27th in Birmingham, England. October 28th, Dublin, Ireland. 29th, Belfast. 31st of October, Chester. November 1st, Manchester. November 2nd, London. November 3rd, Sheffield. November 4th, Glasgow. November 5th, Newcastle. Then we head over the pond to, well, I guess we're already over the pond. We head over the channel. Amsterdam on the 7th. Aschaffenburg, Germany. I'm sure I'm pronouncing it wrong. I apologize. Aschaffenburg, Germany on the 8th. Pratteln, Switzerland on the 9th, my birthday. Trezzo Sulada, Italy on November 10th. Our first time ever in Italy. Roncad, Italy. Rome, Italy on the 12th. 14th is Vienna, Austria. 15th, Munich, Germany. 16th, Essen. 17th, Hamburg. 18th, we finish off the tour in Belgium in Genk. So I apologize if I'm pronouncing some of those cities wrong. I'll get them right as we continue on getting closer. All of those shows, tickets available at FozzyRock.com, as well as the VIP packages with the mini private concert experience, meeting the band, including me for sure. Lots of great stuff. All that at FozzyRock.com. We are super, super excited to come back to Europe. More shows in the States to be added. Thank you to everybody who checked us out at Download, and that's about all I got to say about that. All right, time to get to my favorite tag team partner of all time, The Big Show. I'm sitting here with my favorite partner of all time.
My favorite partner, too.
Big Show has returned to Talk is Jericho.
Yes, and, sir. Thanks for having me back, man.
No, it's great, man. It's we're waiting right now because you have a nice big chair, and I got a little stinky little like folding chair, so they're going to apparently bring us
We need to bring you a more chair of equal size.
Yeah.
Because we know, even though I'm the bigger guy in our tag team, you carried the weight, you did all the negotiating, yeah, the booking, and told me how to work like Gigantor. So right now, it's kind of awkward for me to have the big chair, and you have the puny kid's chair.
And it is a puny one, but it did work out good, the Gigantor thing. You've been able to keep that up for the last few years at least.
Yeah, it runs hot and cold. It just depends on, you know, they'll come to you with emergency. Speaking of the devil, here comes your chair.
Let's have the real behind the scenes unveiling the chair. Oh, hey guys, they're bringing the chair in right now.
So there you go.
Because you're not going to hear this anywhere else.
Nowhere else.
Only
this
here.
This is live action.
You can bring it and put it over here. Oh, it's actually a big, it's more than that. It's a
love
couch
seat.
Why don't you put the
right
couch there?
Yeah, we'll make a pit group out of this.
Perfect. Big, nice couch.
Can I shake your hand?
Oh, yeah, man. Shaking hands here now.
You guys brought us a couch. We appreciate
it. Thank
you,
man. Oh, thanks, brother. Appreciate that. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, fellas. You guys have a good day.
Do you want to sit on the couch and I'll sit in that chair?
Yeah. We're going to move to like Chuck Woolery.
We're such professionals.
You know what? Now it's like an interview stand, because now I'm on the couch and you have your interviewer chair.
I think you might have just cut one, too, because it's a little bit stinky over here.
Well, I farted like 5 minutes ago, bro. I'm a giant. I don't do anything small.
So we're talking about being
now
a giant.
You get this. You get the crap chair.
It's warm.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's
a warm chair. Yes. It's perfect for us to start out this way with a little bit of chaos, but that's perfect. Nice big couch for you. Big chair for me.
Yeah.
But let's talk about being a giant, and first of all, just get right into it, how much less of a giant you are now.
Yes, I'm not really the Big Show anymore. I'm the Big Slim. Yes, I'm
like, how much weight have you lost over the last?
Close to 90 pounds now.
That's unbelievable.
Well, it's been ups and downs throughout the career. Like, you know, I took that time off and did some boxing in 07 and just ass load of cardio and got down to like 425, I think it was. From 537 was my heaviest. So that was a dramatic change there. And then over time, I wasn't doing as much boxing. There were injuries and yada, yada, yada. So I wasn't getting the time in the gym cardio-wise. And this run has been a better run because I've done all this weight loss with zero cardio. It's all been through diet. You know, I got troubles with the knees and the hips, and I've got some miles on me. I'm like an old farm truck. I take a while to get warmed up. I'll run all day, but as soon as you turn me off, it's over.
So what made you finally decide? Was it the pressure on your knees and stuff?
No, it was just time to make a change. I mean, for so many years in my career, I was the Big Show. So in the back of my mind, whether it was fat or aesthetically not pleasing or whatever crap people want to sling around, I enjoyed being the Big Show. I enjoyed being 450 pounds. I enjoyed being the biggest guy around. That was my gimmick. You know what I mean? When I walked out down the ramp and stood in the ring, I made other big guys look small. And then now at the end of my career, I don't need that anymore. You know, I really don't. I mean, now this is a great time for me to make a change and one, personally, to see if I could do it. You know, I've told people before that this whole thing really came about through just a general trash-talking session with John Cena, you know.
How do you mean?
Well, John and I are sitting just like you and I are now, and John and I have been friends for years and had battles, and we always joked years ago, like every 9 months, it was time for a Big Show Cena run because, you know, his AA needed equity, and I need to take it to build equity in his AA. So
that's probably the truth.
That's probably my opinion, but, you know, John and I were joking, and we were talking about training and dieting and stuff like that, and I was making fun of, like, I used to make fun of all the body guys. I mean, that's great. Eat right, live right, die anyway. You know, yeah. That was my grumpy attitude about stuff. And I said, and I told John, I said, who the hell would want to see a giant with abs? And you know John, who is super intelligent, super smart, and has a way of looking at things sometimes in a different way, like we all do. Mm-hmm. But John looks at me and he goes, yeah, a giant with abs. Who would want to see that? And just the way he said it was so dickish that it was
dry,
like,
Cena.
Yeah, it was almost like, you know, you think you can do it, you big pussy. You know what I mean? That kind of a thing. Without John being that crass or saying that. And I got hot. I mean, I got pissed. Like, I walked away from that going, not laughing, like walking away like, that friggin' some bitch thinks I can't do it. Well, I'll show him. This is what we're going to do. And that took me... Oh, that was about a year and a half ago we had that conversation maybe, and then I started looking at different things because, you know, one thing I figured out already is the first three letters in the word diet is die. And I think that's why most people fail with diets because you jump in right away and go, oh, I'm going to diet to this certain amount, and then that's it.
How do you mean?
Well, you know, people diet for a wedding, or they diet...
Oh, I see. They're dieting for an occasion or something like that.
For an occasion, or they diet for summer, for, you know what I mean? And it's just, oh, I'm just eating this stuff just because I'm going to diet, I'm going to lose this. And sometimes they think, oh, I'm going to diet because I'm going to get in shape. And then after a few weeks, their inner fat kid that we all have, the one that wants the junk food and the bad food, the emotional eater, starts squawking really bad. And then they say, well, it's okay, I've worked hard, I can have this. And before they know it, they're off the wagon. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, I really looked at nutrition, talked to some people that knew a lot about nutrition, looked at different meal plans and calorie intake and what I was trying to do, and to eliminate a lot of months of research and really being serious about it. I started slowly. I didn't start as a diet. I started as a lifestyle change. Like I started, okay, well, I'm going to stop drinking sodas.
Right, which is a big thing.
Which is a big thing. At first, it's like, oh, my God, I didn't realize, like, I have 4 or 5 sodas a day. Like, what the hell's wrong with me? So, okay, then I said, okay, well, I'm going to eliminate caffeine. I'm not going to have 10 cups of coffee a day with cream and Splenda in it or Equal or whatever. I'm going to get rid of the cream and the coffee. I'm going to get rid of dairy. So I cut milk out. I cut cheese out. And I started making substitutes. I do cheese, but I do goat cheese. Mm-hmm. I'll do... there's a vegan cheese that I use, you know, for certain things. Like if I'm having a turkey burger patty or a bison patty, I'll use this vegan cheese. So when it melts, it kind of tastes like something. But I've gotten to the point now where, okay, I like the taste of it. I look forward to it.
At first,
what kind of crap is this? And then, but you have to fight past that because that's your inner fat kid sending you messages telling you that, oh, no, you need real cheese. You need calories because it wants to hold on to all that fat. And you have to be stronger than that inner fat kid. So, you know, the times you drive by McDonald's at 2 o'clock in the morning, your inner fat kid's doing backflips telling you how great you've done. You've lost 15 pounds. You can have a fish sandwich. And I'm like, shut up. And you keep driving. So I've learned to give myself different rewards on the eating and I've just changed. Like, you know, I drink water now and at the very most, I'll put some kind of like either the Dasani water flavor or Crystal Light or something like that, you know, just to give it a little flavor. Most of the time, water is just better for you and it tastes better. Mm-hmm. So, but it took me months to get ready to start doing a meal plan. So there were just little things that I had to eliminate. And once I eliminated those, I moved on to something else and I moved on to something else. And then slowly, it started working out. So
you didn't go on a specific diet. You're just kind of winging this on your own?
At first, I was winging it on my own, and then I went through, you know, a specific program that my trainer, Dodd Romero, came up with in Miami, and he's like a, you know, he's like a mad scientist with this stuff. Like a lot of guys that have been doing this, especially as long as he has, they, you know, they know all the little intricacies and the little tricks and what happens. And when he was explaining this to me, I thought he was just, you know, full of crap, honestly. Mm-hmm. I was like, no, you're not going to get excited about carbs on carb day. Bullshit. Trust me, when I know that I've gone so many days without carbs and I get carbs on this day and it's going to be brown rice or it's going to be sweet potatoes, I'm frothing like a crackhead, like ready for the dealer right now. Like, I'm getting carbs today.
I think with that, just brown rice is now like eating a whole chocolate cake or something.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. And it's funny, like, you know, you do these things and then, of course, you always reward yourself. You give yourself, after so many pounds or so many percentages of body fat or whatever your deal is, you got to give yourself what I call a psychological break. You got to give yourself a reward meal in the beginning. And it's important the first 4 or 5 months to give yourself that, a goal. Work hard to achieve that goal. When you achieve that goal, understand that, okay, today I'm going to have whatever, whether it's going to be pizza, whether it's going to be hot dogs, whether it's going to be, you know, I'm going to, you know, French kiss a chocolate cake, whatever it is. You know, I'm going to have this reward. And then it gets to a point where you're so diligent and you're doing well. The reward day isn't what originally it was when you started.
Right.
I mean, like, I remember once I got rolling into this, 3-4 months into this, I said, okay, my reward day, I'm going to have pancakes and I'm going to do all this and blah, 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 blah. And I'm going to have chicken fried steak with gravy and I'm going to blow it up. I had a grilled chicken breast and blueberry whole wheat pancakes with sugar-free syrup. Like, I did not even – and I brought my own butter spray from home. So it was like I really didn't blow it up other than the blueberries and the pancakes. That was – you know, and it was like I was like, well, I'm okay with that because I don't feel bloated. I don't feel like I've completely crapped on all the hard work I've done. So I'm okay with it now.
And once you got the momentum rolling too, like you said, once you're losing 10 pounds, then it's 20, then it's 30.
Yeah.
Now you're starting to like –
and you see changes, and then you work with guys like – a lot of the guys like you, I've worked with some of you guys know I'm Big Show. I mean, you remember when we had the tag titles and I couldn't put them around my waist.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, it's just too big for it. But now I've dropped, you know – 12 inches off my waist, I think. I've gone from 54s to 42. I'm a 42 waist now.
Wow.
And I'm still dropping. My 42s are low. So it's melting down. So now we don't look at a specific weight. Now I'm looking at, okay, it's not about weight anymore for me. It's going to be about body fat.
Body fat.
So we're going to try to get into the fine-tuning of body fat. So we're going to start adding different cardio to it. And I do a real high-rep workout routine anyway. A lot of my workouts are 70 reps, 50 reps, 35 reps. I think the lowest number of reps I do on anything is like 14. Mm. So everything is high rep because, you know, we're older. So we don't need to, you know, I don't need to do 500 pounds for 5 reps anymore. You know what I mean?
Right.
I can do, you know, I can do 225 for 35 reps.
You but see, that's the thing, too. But you're the Big Show, whether you weigh 537 or whether you weigh 337. That's never going to change.
Yeah,
right.
I put equity and time into it. But, you know, for me, there are more opportunities open up now. Like, I noticed that the respect I'm getting from the guys I work with are freaking out. Like, you know, I mean, you guys know how I used to be and how unhealthy I used to be. And to make that kind of change and stick to it. And then I'm also seeing how I'm having a positive influence on a lot of people in general that have followed me for 20 years. Because you don't really think about being a WWE superstar. You don't really think about the impact that you actually really do have on some people. But when I got people that come up to me that, you know, that have weight issues or overweight teens or people like that, that come to me in confidence and say, hey, what you did is really amazing. I'm inspired. You know, this gives me hope and confidence that I can do this. And I'm like, yeah, of course you can. Mm. You know, I think, you know, that's one of the beautiful things about being an upright hominid. The potential.
Good word.
Yeah, not really. I hung around you.
Smart, yeah.
Yeah. My vocabulary improves when I hang around you, you smart Canadian. The human potential is limitless. So, and I think, you know, too many times people let society or even let their own insecurities put themselves in positions where they fail. And I think that's one thing I've learned just with this transition is that pretty much anything is possible. And I know it's a crazy lesson to learn at 45 years old, and it's not that my life is that dramatic or bad or crazy, because God knows I've made a lot of mistakes in my life, hundreds of bad choices, thousands of bad choices. But, you know, that's all in the past, and I've left all that there. Now I try to go every day, do what I need to do for today, and we'll handle tomorrow. But today, we're going to worry about today. We're going to eat right today. We're going to If we're feeling tired and lazy, well, guess what? We're going to get our big ass up and we're going to go to the gym. Because if you drive to the gym and you walk in, you're going to do something, and it's better than laying on your ass and not doing anything.
Doing nothing. Have you shown Cena your abs?
Oh, yeah. Cena's seen the abs. Actually, I put the pressure on myself a while ago, and I had a really good training sequence and meal plans and stuff like that, and everything worked out. And I'd done about 250 crunches that night to finish out my workout, and the gym lighting was great. And I could feel my abs yeah. through my shirt. So I looked in the mirror and pulled my shirt up, and I went, holy crap. And that's like the first time I really noticed, like, I got giant bricks.
Yeah.
So I threw a picture on Instagram, and it blew up. Then I was like, God, I wish I had done that. Now the pressure's really on,
yeah.
You know, because you kind of put yourself out there a little bit. And for me, it's still coming. I mean, you know, it's one of those kind of things that, like, now it's like, well, you know, you made the bed, buddy. You got to line it now. You're a full-blown body guy now, so you got to eat right. You know?
What did Vince say? He must have made some comments.
Yeah, well, Vince is really funny because, you know, Vince has dealt with me for so many years.
Right.
And years ago, I was always a great big talker and a very short walker. So I think now the fact is that I don't really talk any shit about dieting or training. I just go do it. And
just
showing it. And I think that's the biggest difference, because a lot of people want to talk about training, a lot of people want to talk about dieting. And remember the guys that were really into training and dieting, it was really hard to get information out of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to be like, you know, like Triple H, I've known longer than you, believe it or not. It's one of the longest. It was real hard. Like, Hunter was nice, but he was never forthcoming with shit. Like, mm-hmm. You know, it was like, oh yeah, you can do this. And he showed me some stuff for like warming up on my shoulders, and I've worked out with him a couple times at the gym. He's amazing to train with. But, like, just the info on a lot of stuff. Like, I'd see him, his watch would go off, and I'd see him have a cup full of cashews or a cup full of almonds. He goes, oh, yeah, well, this is going on, and I need fats here at this time. And you know what I mean? Like, he's very
dialed in.
He's very disciplined when he's on point, you know. And I was just like, well, that's weird. I'll never do that. But now I get it. But now I understand why he's doesn't want to sit there and shoot the fat about, you know, training and dieting, because this is information that he's worked for, that he's earned, that he's done his research. And to be quite frankly, you know, diet changes like this, what works for one guy might not necessarily work for someone else. We all have different body types and different caloric intakes. I mean, God, you remember Batista. Batista mm-hmm. looked amazing. But you'd watch Batista go to his room with 8 giant Snickers bars.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or he'd sit down after a match and eat an entire cake.
Yeah.
And you just look at him and go, what?
Yeah.
How's he? Okay, well, he's the type of guy that, you know, can eat a lot of sugar and process it fast and keep going, because his metabolism is high because of the work that he's put in for so many years.
Right.
You know what I mean? So for me, you know, I have to train and work hard and get to that level where, you know, if I want to eat a whole cake, I can do it. I don't want to anymore. I don't have the desire to, so I'm good.
Was one of the reasons, kind of an additional reason, besides the fact you wanted to kind of trim up and look good, was this rumor for the whole last year, maybe even more than rumor, of you versus Shaq at WrestleMania?
Well, yeah, that whole Shaq thing came out. We did that at the ESPY red carpet. And
last year,
and, you know, there were a lot of other political things going on at the time, so we shot that angle, and
that's when Brock was in trouble with the UFC.
I'm not going to even go there. Whatever.
There's some stuff going on.
My name's Paul. That's between you all. But anyway, I mean, basically, that was that angle was shot right there in the red carpet. So for me, it was kind of like, well, this is kind of.
What did you do? Did you challenge him?
I just went up to the red carpet and said, hey, let's do this at WrestleMania next year, and he was like, okay.
Did he know about it?
I guess so.
Yeah.
I don't know. So we went out and did it. I mean, this has been a very awkward situation to be in, because the amount of information that went back and forth was really off, you know what I mean? And I think a lot of it was, you know, Shaq's a busy dude. He's got a lot of stuff going on, and I think his enthusiasm and his attitude is fantastic. I mean, he definitely wanted to do something, and he had a lot of crazy ideas for an absolute insane, you know, setup. But it just, you know, a lot of times in business, those things don't work out. I mean, you know, and you know, with whatever he had going on, with whatever WWE wanted to do, again, it's all above my pay grade. Mm-hmm. You know me. I just show up and work with the marks. I don't book the marks.
Was it kind of disappointing for you when you found out it wasn't going to happen?
It was, but at the same time, I could understand a lot of fans' points, too, because a lot of fans were like, oh, my God, poor Big Show's getting stuck in another celebrity. I mean, let's face it. I've done Aki Bono, Kevin Green, Dennis Rodman, Floyd Mayweather. Those were all great experiences, but we all know the outcome. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We all know the outcome. It's like, you know, I mean, yeah, so I don't think a lot of fans were very positive on that, that were fans of me personally. I think some fans were like, oh yeah, that'd be a great spectacle. And sure, I could have had a fantastic match with Shaq and done, made his experience fantastic and given him a WrestleMania moment. But it just didn't work out. And that's just, I mean, even my angle with Floyd Mayweather didn't start off as a singles. It started off as a tag.
Right.
I think it was me and Floyd originally against Dave and Ray. Because originally there was going to be heat between Floyd and Ray. And then he had then brought me in. I was Floyd's goon. Then I think Ray was going to bring in Dave. Then it was going to be a tag. Ray and Dave both got hurt.
Oh.
I think Dave tore a lat and Ray did something, bicep or knee or something. So they both got hurt. So then it was like, well, you want to do a singles? I'm like, yeah. Let me get this right. I go from splitting a payday four ways to two ways.
True veteran's way of thinking.
Yeah, exactly. Right, like, yeah. Wait a minute. I mean, I cut two guys. Yeah, I'm down. Hell yeah. So we did that and went running with it. And that was actually one of the better angles I've ever been involved with, because I got to do a lot with that. You know, we got to do a lot of media. We got to talk a lot of trash. And it was really great to be a part of that WrestleMania, and we did a great buy rate at the time. I think that was the second highest buy rate we'd ever done.
It was a huge success.
Next to Trump and Vince, where Trump shaved Vince's head, which is absolutely, the Battle of the Billionaires was amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
tell me about when he broke your nose. That was a...
Well, I've done this, I've told this story, but like when we were talking this, putting this together in Vegas, you know, I was telling, I told Floyd, who, by the way, Floyd's fantastic to work with. Just so smart and savvy. And
really understands this
and
business.
Understands the business of heel and baby face. And he gets it. I mean, you think about him in his boxing when he calls out all the, you know, the Mexican fighters on Cinco de Mayo. I mean, he knows what he's doing. He causes controversy and makes people pay to see him fight.
We did Larry King once, and he told me a lot of this stuff is, I pull it from wrestling.
Yeah.
I understand the concept of getting people to hate me. It's because they want to buy tickets to see me get beat up. So no one could ever beat me up.
Yeah, it's Muhammad Ali did the same thing.
Exactly, right.
Yeah, it's the same, that same psychology, which is basically wrestling psychology 101.
That's right. Yeah.
You don't necessarily buy a ticket because of the guy you like. You buy a ticket for the guy you hate that you want to see get his ass whipped.
Yeah.
So when we did this, I told Floyd, I said, look, man, if we're going to get off the ground, you're going to have to break my nose. And he looked at me and goes, what? And I said, yeah, look, I mean, don't shove it through the back of my friggin' skull and make me have like a gangster nose the rest of my life. And I'd spent a whole year boxing, so I've been punched in the face for a year by heavyweights. No offense. I mean, you know, Floyd Mayweather's 152 pounds. I'm not really worried about him punching me in the face.
Right.
Boy, did I get a surprise. I was amazed at how fast Floyd was. And he threw his jabs, his straight jabs were in there so fast, just bam, bam, bam. And then he hit me with a perfect left hook right on the tip of the nose and didn't really break my nose. He busted the cartilage in my nose that instantly made it bleed. You know what I mean? But just the way he did, I was like, damn, this guy is so good. He can actually break your nose perfectly.
Right, right.
Like, I mean, it was just, whether it was a happenstance or accident, I like to go into the myth that he's that damn good. That, you know what I mean? It's just like the old punch where Mike Tyson hit, was it Sean?
Well, I was just going to say, with me too, he came as close as humanly possible without actually hitting me, to where there's no way it was a coincidence or a fluke.
Yeah.
He knew exactly where to swing to just brush my chin. You know what I mean? Like, the precision was amazing.
You gotta figure how many, those guys are on the pro level, and those guys are throwing punches, you know, how many thousands of punches a day have they thrown? So they, you know, that's why they're the best at what they do. So it was great that we got that thing off and running, but I was still hot, and I told him, I said, look, when you break my nose, run. I said, because I'm not clinically sane, and if I get my hands on you, I might kill the whole angle before it even starts. When I start slamming you like the abominable snowman with Bugs Bunny, start slapping you in the head, and your feet are going out the bottom of my hand, you know, so just run. He goes, okay. So when he broke my nose and I went after him, his whole crew scattered, and they all had the sweatshirts and baggy jeans on, and I ran one of them down because I thought it was him. And then I realized it wasn't him. Then by then, he was gone, and I remember I was human because I had so much adrenaline going, which is great for TV, but you know as well as I do, sometimes you get stiffed, it brings the fire out.
Oh, yeah.
So the fire is definitely out, and I remember the only guy that had the balls to come anywhere near me was Shane. You know what I mean? And Shane comes up to me, goes, are you okay? And I went, yeah, I'm good, because we're on camera, So Shane's right in front of me. He's got his hand on me. He's looking at me, and he's doing, you know how Shane, he does the eyebrows up thing. Yeah. He's like, yeah. You okay?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I'm good. And he goes, that was awesome. You know how he does his little thing? Yeah. And I was like, yeah, that was good. And I just remember the blood was running down my mouth and the back of my throat. And I was like, yeah, we're off to the races now.
Yeah, you knew you were going to make some
money. But we had to go out in the parking lot and bring Floyd back because he was in the car leaving.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was terrified. He was getting the hell out of town. Screw this. I'm gone. I was like, no, no, man, that was great. And he was blown away that I was very excited about what happened and how he broke my nose. Like, you could just tell he was like, wow, this dude is insane. And then we got to spend all that time on the road doing media, and, you know, he would talk trash, and I was like, yeah, I float like a battleship, sting like a nuke. What's up? You know, instead of float like a butterfly and sting like a bee. You know, we just had so much fun with it. And
how did you put that match together? Was there a lot of rehearsal time?
There wasn't a lot of rehearsal time because Floyd was busy.
Yeah.
He had a lot of stuff going on. You know, I flew to Vegas once, and we did an in-ring rehearsal once in Vegas where we talked about a general plan. And then we had a slight walkthrough the day before WrestleMania just to go over everything that we talked about. And Hunter was in that, helped putting that together too, which shows, you know, he's got such a great mind for
it. It was really well booked, you could tell.
Well booked, put together well, didn't put me in a bad light at all. He used everything but the kitchen sink to get it done, and it made sense. Mm-hmm. You know, and I really enjoyed how that came across, and his sportsmanship and professionalism was amazing.
Speaking of Floyd, you know, we've never really talked about your boxing career show. I want to get into that a little bit. But before we do, I'm fired up, man. I'm fired up, baby, about something else. Guess what's back for season four, Big Show? Alone, the reality show on history where 10 survivalists are dropped into some ridiculous, unforgiving wilderness situations. This season, they're going back to North Vancouver Island where the weather conditions are the harshest ever on this show. And you know how harsh they can be. And the threat of predators and wild animals is worse than last season. They're facing probable death with this. Alone is also doing something else different for this season. The 10 participants are competing in 5 teams, brothers, fathers and sons, and a married couple. Wow. If you haven't seen this show, you got to check it out now. Because it is a true, real survivalist reality show. Participants split up and dropped off as individuals. They have 5 items per person that they bring to the island, and in order to win the game, the teams have to find each other and then survive on the island together and longer than the other competing pairs. Talk about a test to a relationship, especially that married couple. Wow. And here's the really crazy part. They are truly out there alone. No camera crews or production people with them. No crazy challenges to win special privileges. All the participants are given cameras with directions on how to film themselves, okay? So they have to document their own experience and survive whatever Mother Nature throws at them with next to nothing. It's like a real-life Blair Witch project or something. But the pair that lasts the longest gets as they go home with $500,000. That's right. Winning $500,000 is what's at stake, but it's not that easy, not by a long shot. All the people playing have to build their own shelter, find their own food and water, fight off wild animals, and do it all using whatever they can find in their surroundings, living off the land, the mental toughness, the endurance, the ingenuity, the self-reliance. You need all of that and more to survive and win alone, okay? You really got to check this show out if you like reality shows. This is the real deal. Set your DVR, do whatever you need to do, but be sure to check it out. Watch Alone. You'll be totally hooked after one episode. Alone, season 4 premieres Thursday, June 15th at 10 Eastern, 9 Central on History. All right, check it out.
Downsizing imagines what might happen if, as a solution to overpopulation, Norwegian scientists discover how to shrink humans to 5 inches tall and propose a 200-year global transition from big to small. People soon realize how much further money goes in a miniaturized world. And with the promise of a better life, everyman Paul Safronik and wife Audrey decide to abandon their stressed lives in Omaha in order to get small and move to a downsized community. A choice that triggers life-changing adventures. Starring Matt Damon, Christoph Waltz, Hong Chau, and Kristen Wiig. See the film Rolling Stone calls a visionary masterpiece, and Variety raves as a spectacular and ingenious comedy. Downsizing is in theaters December 22nd.
Talk is Jericho.
Let's talk briefly about your boxing career. We've never really spoken about that a lot.
Well, it's non-existent.
But there was a time when it was like the next big heavyweight was kind of an idea.
Well, you know, it was thought about. You know, it was some stuff I was doing with a couple of guys, and it was considered. But let's be honest. I mean, you know, it was. I was 35 years old when I started doing that. You know what I mean? And what it did was, do I have a good punch? Absolutely. Not my shitty working punch I throw on TV where I'm scared I'm going to kill the guy I'm working with. But the one where...
It's the size of your hands, dude.
The one where I shoot to the moon and I can throw my hands pretty fast. You know what I mean? But there's a psychology in boxing and there's an unconscious competence. My old trainer, Artie Artwell, used to call it unconscious competence, which is like what we do in the ring. We're not conscious of what we're doing because it's fluid. We're doing it because it's what's next.
It's instinct.
It's instinct. Yeah. Boxers are the same way. By the time I saw an opening, I'm like, oh, I should punch now, opening was already gone. Mm. You know what I mean? So, and that takes repetition and time in the ring and opponents and stuff like that. It just wasn't... it was fun to get in there and fight and clobber people and get clobbered. I mean, you know, it's definitely, ball busting manly shit. But at the same time, you're looking at it from a business standpoint. And what it really did was help reinvigorate my love for what I do.
Right.
Because sometimes you step away from something and then you forget, like, oh, I really do.
And I'm good at it.
And I'm good at it. So I'm going to go back to this.
I remember when they had Butterbean come in and he fought the winner of the Brawl for All.
Yeah.
Which was...
Bart Gunn
and whipped his ass like in 20 seconds.
It's just the difference between a pro and an non-pro.
Yeah, street fighter and an actual, the sweet science. He was just waiting for him to make his move.
Waiting for him to screw up and he threw that overhand right that most fighters never see coming.
You know
what I mean? In his stand-up, Queensberry Rules boxing match, Butterbean has all the advantages.
Mm-hmm.
In a street fight in the backyard, Bart Gunn would have beat his ass all over the parking lot. You know what I mean? Because he was a rough, tugged some bitch. So, that's just the difference in it. I mean, if you look at tough guys now, you got to look at your UFC heavyweight guys, like a guy like Brock, like Jesus God.
Right.
You know what I mean? That power, explosiveness, wrestling ability, take you down.
Strength,
you know what I mean? That's, So it's kind of a blessing to have Brock back here in our business, too, because he brings such a validity, big main event feel to all the events he's in. I've got to work him a couple of times on some live event shows since he's been back, and I just love being out there in the ring with him because it's got that big fight feel.
Because he doesn't talk a lot before you go to the ring, does he? Or...
No, hell no. No, we do a shot of whiskey and go. you have to do a shot of whiskey with Brock, so it's not like, no, I'm training. Well, yeah, okay, I'll have a shot of whiskey.
But obviously he's going to have to respect you just because of your size and treat you differently than the normal guys.
Brock is always – here's the thing about Brock. Brock has never been an egomaniac. Despite how people think he's booked or how his character is on TV, Brock's always been about business.
Mm-hmm.
And, he doesn't do anything that takes away from what he contributes to the business, but he is all for contributing to the business, if that makes sense. He's always been fantastic to me. I think the first person that beat him on his first run here was me when Heyman turned on him.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So Brock understands that for him, working with a bigger guy that can beat the snot out of him and bring it is good for him to overcome when he was a babyface. You know what I mean? And now it's good for him because, when he's sending me to Suplex City, it's an impressive thing. You know what I mean? But still, he still treats me with a lot of respect and has fun with me out there because he knows I know the deal. We're going to go out there and have fun. And I enjoy wrestling with Brock. I do tease Brock. I think Brock's got the best backstage game since Hulk Hogan as far as intimidating the boys,
Everyone's intimidated.
Because Hogan was so famous back in the day when he came backstage, oh my God, there's Hulk Hogan.
You didn't know what to do,
You didn't know what to do. It was Hulk Hogan. Brock comes backstage and you see these guys like flatten up against the walls and they almost piss themselves and Brock's walking down the hall.
He just looks in their direction.
Looks in their direction and they get pale and they pee on themselves and Brock's laughing the whole time when he ends it because he's just a good old country boy.
Yeah, total. Just
good
northern,
old country boy. You know what I mean?
Farm
Don't get
boy.
Me wrong. You piss him off, he'll punch you in the face with your own hand.
Yeah.
But still, I love it when he walks through and you just see the guy. You can just tell they get all nervous and start stuttering and shit. It's funny.
Let's talk about another, maybe the best big man of all time. WrestleMania just passed and Taker.
Maybe
had his last match.
Of all time.
I know that especially when you first came in here, Taker had a lot of influence on you. Worked with him for years.
Boy, did he.
Talk to me about that.
Well, it was unreal. When I first came into WWF, then WWE now, I was so unprepared for the New York environment. Because I started in WCW, and I was working with a lot of guys that had guaranteed contracts in WCW that weren't fighting over positions. They were already established. So I didn't understand the hunger or drive.
And you came in at the top, too.
I came in at the top, so I'm right in the middle of them. So literally, I had no friggin' idea. I thought, hey, yeah, we're all buddies. We're all, you know, we're all hanging out. We're all making money. This is great. All right, pals. Mm-hmm. You know, I get up to New York, and buddy, I didn't have my shit together. Stone Cold would eat your ass up. Triple H would eat your ass up. Mick Foley, Rock. All the guys were on top. They didn't give you shit from the APA all the way down. Even Road Dogg, for Christ's sake. I remember they sent me to the ring one time to punch Road Dogg while he was wrestling Rock. And I punched him. He staggered in the ring, then ran like three or four spots with Rock and then finally got. But basically, he no-sold my shit from the floor. And I was like, wow, then why did I even walk down here and do anything? But
yeah, they didn't warn either one of us. I had the same problems when we came from WCW to here.
No one told us shit. Right? We were pretty much on our own. Like, yeah, here's the wolves, fellas.
They don't like us? Yeah, what are we talking about?
We're not friends?
Really?
Yeah. What the hell? Yeah, so for me, I was very fortunate that for whatever reason, probably Taker probably wishes he never would have done it, being funny, but Taker pulled me aside and was pretty hard on my ass for a long time.
What would he say to you?
Just big, little things, bumping in the wrong spots, not being aggressive enough, not enough cardio, stupid mistakes in the ring, stupid psychology, just everything A to Z. Like, I basically, you know, even though I was a former world champion in WCW, I started at the frickin' bottom.
Yeah.
Which was great because a lot of the stuff that makes our business beautiful, I missed in WCW because of the way I came in. You know what I mean? And I had to start. Just start earning the guys' respect around me. I didn't take it for granted. Like, oh, yeah, I'm working with Hogan. I know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I didn't know shit.
Right.
You know, and I got exposed when I came up here that I didn't know anything. And it was the best thing that happened to me because, you know, I went through a lot of guys that, you know, really were pissed off at the amount of money that I was making. Granted, I was paid on potential, and my old trainer used to say potential is a French word for you ain't worth a shit yet. But you know what I mean? But still, you know, I was a good athlete. Yes, I was a freak of nature at the time. There was nobody else around like me. So you want to try to develop that product and get something out of that product. Mm-hmm. You know, was I a little bit hard-headed? Did I have a little bit of trouble understanding? Like, it seemed like to me like everything I did was wrong. You know, in essence, yeah, everything I did do was wrong. Mm-hmm. Until finally I settled in and got it together and understood because there was too many variables to everything that you're doing. Okay, bump for this guy. Don't bump for this guy. Sell for this guy. Don't sell for this guy. Eat this guy up. You know, sell like there's no tomorrow for this guy. Like there were so many different variables. Be an athlete. Don't jump off the top rope. You know, there were so many different things going on. And personally, it attacked the hell out of me, and it was very difficult to get over. I mean, you know, it's one of those things you're getting your ass chewed out, and you really don't understand why you're getting your ass chewed out, and the last thing you can do is ask why, because then it'll expose what kind of idiot you really are. So you just have to nod your head, hope you filter it out, and hope you go out there and figure it out. You know, these new kids don't really have that problem because they're catered to. Mm. They get everything explained to them. It gets broken down. They sit down. They watch videos. And if they mess up, they get patted on the back. It's okay. Well, we need to do this next time. Mm. They can't take an ass chewing.
Yeah.
That's the one thing about the newer kids. They can't take an ass chewing because they fold like aluminum foil.
It's funny, though, because there's someone I'll tell you afterwards right now that's in that position where everything he does is wrong. Like Vince is on his case.
Oh,
which
yeah.
You've been there. I've been there.
But that's a rite of passage. If you're on Vince's radar, that means he sees something in you.
That's great. I told him the exact same thing that you just said.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I remember when I came in, I got chewed out my second or third month in, and I called Benoit because I was so depressed, and he told Brett about it, and Bret Hart called me and said, same thing happened to him when he was on his rise. He said, Vince likes to break you down and then build you back up in his image.
In his image that you'll be better than you ever were.
Right.
And in a sad, effed up way.
Yeah.
It works.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I know that, you know, I would, because of the ass chewings and stuff that I got from him and from Taker, I automatically go the right direction with those two. I think about what those two are doing and what Vince is really doing here, what he's not saying, but what does he really want? Mm-hmm. What's the big picture?
There's a lot of guessing, yeah.
There's a lot of guessing, but it's also you have to have the experience and been on the other end of events asked you and to understand what he's really trying to get out of you. And sometimes he won't hand it to you. You'll get it after the fact, and he's pissed off at you because you're not smart enough to figure out what he wants.
Why didn't you guess it yourself?
Yeah. Why didn't you guess it yourself? I have faith in you, you know, that kind of a thing. So, yeah, it makes you a better talent. It makes you a better performer. I think it makes you a more confident, solid individual once you get forged in fire.
That's right. Yeah, it does make sense. Yeah,
you become a stronger person in your character and your convictions on anything, too, because you know now what you're about and what you believe in and what you're doing, and you'll stand right there and, no, I'm sorry.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Because you just know, right.
Yeah, because you know. And that's the thing. That's one of the things when he finds people and puts on his radar, he makes them find that conviction to believe in themselves so that, you know, they're not transparent or wishy-washy when they're doing other things. Because, you know, and it's funny, too, because, like, now I try to tell these younger guys now, like, you know, everybody here gets along. They all go to Panera Bread and Chipotle or whatever the hell they can eat now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They all go to their CrossFit gyms and, you know, they got their 17.1 workouts and, you know, they're all buddies. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Back in the day, we all hated each other. But if you think about it, Vince would prefer an environment where we're all.
I think
all,
he liked that.
He liked that environment because when you don't like the guy next to you, you're not going to go out there and take it easy.
Right.
You're going to go out there and work hard because you want to outdo this
yes.
guy. So Vince is paying you a lot of money to be at your best and be your most competitive. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And then if you're not at your most competitive because you're comfortable, you think, oh, I'll work here forever. I've made it. I've arrived. That's when he shakes up the barrel a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So when he puts you on his radar, he's shaking up the barrel. He's letting you know, don't get comfortable because your last name's not McMahon and your job's not guaranteed. Yeah,
that's right. You're not going to be here as long as you think you are if you don't change
things. You might
be
fired 5 minutes from now.
Yeah, so. But I do definitely believe, and maybe it's changed. Maybe Vince is a little older now, so he's changed. But when we got here, I don't know for a fact, but they would pit us against each other.
Of course they would. They would stir up situations, and they would put you in situations where you weren't given full info to find out who was going to dominate and who was going to come out ahead on it. You know what I mean?
That happened to you?
Oh, it happened to me all the time. Yeah. And I would always, in the beginning, I would always cave in to the other guy. I would always cave in to what he wanted to do. I'd always cave in. You know what I mean? Which you never did. Mm-hmm. You fought tooth and nail on everything. You still do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Now it's different because I know who I am. I'm what about. I know what I'm supposed to do. So I don't cave in. I just don't do it. Mm-hmm. So I don't get hit with the same bullshit that I used to get tried to talk into back in the day. Because, you know, there's a lot of car salesmen and a lot of workers here. So, you know, they'll talk you into, oh, yeah, it's great if I body slam you. It'd be awesome. Oh, you think so? Okay.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, it sounds good. Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah, you can close on me over the top to the floor. Sure, that sounds good.
So there's certain things now that you just know absolutely not that
absolutely
I'm not going to do.
Yeah. Like, you know, and it's funny. It's because I've got 10-year experience now. Most people don't even suggest it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, what was it one time? We were working with somebody who should remain nameless because I don't want to bury him because I'm not into burying guys. But he got a little bit of push here for a while, and he was an absolute idiot. But he was a very small guy. And he was talking. He said, yeah, and I'll bump show off the apron. I'm looking at him like, what? Because he's a little bitty fella. I said, you go ahead and try that shit and see how it works out. And I thought he'd have enough sense to not do it. He came over and tried it, and I just flattened his ass and grabbed him by the head and bent him over the top rope from standing on the outside of the ring and just waffle-ironed him right in the chest and sucked the air right out of him. And I said, I told you that idea was stupid. What were you thinking? You know? And then he kind of slinked back to his corner and tagged out, just trying to figure out, like, he didn't do what I told him. No, because your idea is wrong, you dumbass.
You're right. I told you.
Yeah, I learned that with Stone Cold, working with him in London, and I talked about it on his show, but... Like with Steve, I worked Steve for 2 weeks in Europe, and he beat the shit out of me every night. He hit me with a stunner and beat me. I'm like, well, he's not giving me anything. And Johnny Ace and Fit were on me. I remember I'd work out with Fit in the afternoons, and Fit would just kick the hell out of me laughing because that's just the way Fit was. Mm-hmm. He's like, you're a giant. What are you letting me kick you for?
Yeah.
Because I'm supposed to sell. I don't know. I don't know. And then I was supposed to – Vince wanted Steve to put me over in London in a dark match. And I remember Steve spitting his dip cup and goes – God damn, Vince, these people paid a lot of money. See, Stone Cold, hit a few stunners, drink a few beers, not do a job to the f***ing Big Show. And I'm standing right there. And you know you feel like an insignificant piece of trash when a guy just basically says you're not good enough to put over in a fake business.
Right, right.
You know, I'm like, okay. So then they talked, and then Vince comes back and goes, well, Steve does make a valid point, but I want you to give him a good fight. So I'm now like, yeah, I'm sure he does. He sells a shitload of merch. I'm sure you're going to side with him, obviously. Mm-hmm. So we got in the match, and I pulled his tights, and I didn't know he was sensitive about his tights, but I threw him back in the ring. I guess I pulled him up his ass, and he got hot about it. Because you know some of those old-timers are always sensitive about something.
Sure. You can't show Stone Cold's ass to the crowd.
Yeah, because his big white fat ass, I'm a baby face, and da-da-da, whatever. So then he punched me in the chin, and I lost it. I grabbed him by the face and picked him up by the face and ran him across the ring and bent him over the turnbuckle. I went, hey, you son of a bitch. like that. Like I got mad. And he goes, there you go, kid. Let it fire up. And it clicked.
Uh-huh.
And everything he did, I just no-sold and beat the piss out of him.
Mm-hmm.
I gave him nothing. Absolutely nothing. And he tried, because you know Steve is that very erratic.
Yes.
Barroom brawler.
Yes, all over the place.
All over the place, which is exciting to watch. You know, it must have taken an amazing amount of cardio to work like Steve did, you know, and yeah. Obviously because he had one speed, 100 miles an hour.
That's true.
And then he hit me with a stunner. I went, well, okay, that's his finish. I'm a businessman. I'm not an asshole. Then he told me to kick out.
Mm.
And he hit me with 7 stunners that night. That was his comeback. That was the only offense he got after I shut him down was 7 stunners.
That's great.
But every one was louder and louder, and it taught me something. I was like, well, yeah, I'm a giant. I don't need a particular invite to fight back or to cut someone off.
Or to not sell.
Or not sell. Yeah. You know, if you hit me with something weak, I don't have to sell it.
Right.
I just knock the piss out of your back because that transcends in people's minds.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you get too spot happy in the back and, oh, I should bump here and should do this and should do that. But it doesn't work out there. And it taught me to be more confident in myself. I said, if I can treat Stone Cold like this, I can treat anybody like this.
Right, right, right.
And then for me, it all changed. I started working with Brock and doing a bunch of stuff with him, and it all changed.
Did you like working with Taker?
I loved working with Taker, but I used to have anxiety working with Taker because Taker was like my mentor. And for me, it was very hard to go out there and not screw up.
Mm.
And I would always stress out about screwing out with Taker a lot. When I came back from the boxing, I got to run with Taker a little bit in some of the Europe tours and house shows. And I remember we had a match in France in the Coliseum. And we went probably 35, 40 minutes that night. Mike Chioda didn't know the finish. He was having a nervous breakdown because we didn't know. We were just going to go out there and work. And Taker was so over. And the ambiance was amazing with the old Coliseum.
Yeah, in France, yeah.
Crowd was just ridiculous. They chant Undertaker and it was like waves from the ocean hitting you, and I was on fire with everything. And I remember that was the night, you know, we toasted a beer that night. He said, good job, kid.
Yeah.
But it was like he didn't have anything bad to say.
Yeah.
There wasn't a, you know, I was like, wow, I finally made it. Holy shit, I made it. You know, yeah. And then after that, you know, we had so much fun working together, you know, because he's on that next level. When it went from him being the master and I was the apprentice to us being
peers.
Yeah. It totally changed for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because I had earned his respect, and then we had a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't realize how fun he was to work for the longest time. I was just, you know, trying to keep from shitting myself out there the whole time.
Intimidating guy.
Well, no, it's just because, you know, he cared. You know, he's trying to help you and you've just screwed up so much. You put so much pressure on yourself. You know what I mean? You know, I mean, I think I got in the ring one time, stepped over the top rope and got my foot hung and tripped, you know, and it's just, you know, and he's standing in the ring, you know, like looking at me like,
good Lord,
you friggin' buffoon. I'm definitely not selling for you tonight, you know. And I just want to crawl under the ring and die because I'm just so freaking embarrassed. You f***ed up. Yeah, I know I did. Thank you very much. I am very well aware. Thank you, fans.
Didn't you do that in Vince's plane once? You kind of fell down the...
No, that was going to WrestleMania with Mayweather. We get off the plane that night, and I thank God I had on that leather jersey with a big stingray dragon on the back of it. You know, it's like a motorcycle jersey.
Jacket or
okay, it's like a baseball jersey, but it's leather for riding motor. But I had this big stingray dragon on the back of it and shit, and this guy made me as cool as hell. But I slipped on the wet guardrail and the steps on Vince's plane because of the condensation, and both feet went straight out, and I broke the railing and his fucking door on his plane of the steps. Or I went 3 feet straight up and smacked on it. If I hadn't had that jacket on, I'd have broke a rib. Like I think I went into that match with Mayweather with like a bruised cartilage in my ribs, for crying out loud. But I didn't say anything because it was Mania, so I just kept my mouth shut. But
I'm sure Vince was laughing at that.
I heard him laugh on the plane, and then when I didn't move, it got real serious.
Oh.
And the only one that actually gave a shit to find out if I was okay was Edge.
Hmm.
Edge comes over and goes, oh, buddy, are you okay?
Hey, buddy.
Yeah, you know him? But he had so much concern in his voice. I went, yeah, I'm fine. He goes, wow, what a bump. And then he popped. But everybody else, Dunn and all the rest of the, you know.
Hunter, Vince.
Yeah, all the usual suspects on Vince's plane were all dying laughing.
So let's go back to something you were talking about.
having the confidence to know what to do in the ring and when to do it. You have it more than almost anybody else in the company. I specifically want to talk about the match you had recently in Champaign, Illinois with Jinder Mahal. Before he was the champion, he was just kind of still rising up the ranks. It was just a couple months ago, but let's talk about how you allowed him to give you a body slam. Okay, I mean, that was just amazing to me on a small spot show. But before we get into that, let me say thanks to another Talk is Jericho sponsor, TrueCar. Okay, I've been basically talking about TrueCar almost since I started doing this podcast, and that's because they really did make the car buying experience fast and easy for me. They helped me get my Cadillac last year, saved me hours of time, not to mention a few grand off the price of the car, and TrueCar can do the same for you. Whether you're looking for a brand new car or used vehicle, with TrueCar, you get upfront pricing information so you can enjoy a better buying experience. And when I say upfront pricing, I'm talking about real pricing on actual inventory in stock at the local TrueCar certified dealer. Using TrueCar and the TrueCar app lets you see what other people paid for the car you want, so you can determine a fair price, feel confident when you buy the car. And TrueCar connects you with a local certified dealer of your choosing who will honor your guaranteed savings, which makes the car buying process quicker and easier. And now check this out. TrueCar also shows all the dealers available incentives before you arrive at the dealership. TrueCar users save on average over $3,000 off MSRP, and over 3 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. Over 13,000 dealers in TrueCar Certified Dealer Network, so there's definitely one near you. So when you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar or download the TrueCar app to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. I did it myself last year. New Cadillac Escalade. Bought it using TrueCar. It was quicker. It was faster. It was easier. It was cheaper. What more do you want? What more do you need, man? I'm telling you right now, TrueCar is the way for you if you want to get a new car. And remember, some features not available in all states. This really works. I've used it myself. TrueCar, go check it out now.
Hey guys, this is Chael Sonnen. Make sure you check out my podcast, You're Welcome. We talk about MMA. We talk about professional wrestling, politics, anything you need to know about today's top issues, so that you can sound intelligent, and you get them all from me, your humble host, America's favorite gangster. Make sure you check me out. You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen. New episodes every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday at Podcast One app, Apple Podcasts, and of course, PodcastOne.com.
Talk is Jericho.
Let's talk about a little bit. You mentioned about the confidence of knowing what to do and all that sort of thing, and allowing guys to do only certain things. I'm watching the match last night. We're in Champaign, Illinois.
Right.
There's probably 3,000 people there, sure. So they're a good crowd. You're working with Jinder Mahal.
Right.
He's got a great look. He's working his ass off to be
doing
ripped.
Fantastic.
You guys go out there, and I've known you for a long time, and sometimes you go out there and you'll have a 3-4 minute match and tear the house down because people love you. Last night you guys were in there for about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And was that something that you had planned beforehand? Were you just in the right mood?
A lot of it has to do with the match worked out that I got to work with Jinder, but I really have a lot of respect for what Jinder's done. One, he's a good dude backstage. He's not an asshole. He's not a prick. He's not let success go to his head, despite his character on TV.
Right.
He's a hardworking dude, and he talked smack on Talking Smack a while ago, and he was really fired up and showed a lot of passion and a lot of just what Jinder Mahal on the inside's made out of. Mm-hmm. And you know us as old guys, we don't really have to do anything we don't want to do.
Right.
And with him, I wanted to prove a point to a lot of the younger guys in the back too, that you can have a match that's not a spot-oriented match. Tell a story, have some psychology. This is a cold match. There was no heat between Jinder and I, other than I'm an old, respected veteran babyface. They're just happy he's not dead, and they're just happy I'm alive and I'm out there. You know, and Jinder Mahal, this up-and-coming heel who's got a fantastic different look and who has really made a lot of changes in his work and his body. I mean, Jinder's work is really good.
He's tall, too. He's got to be 6'5".
He's got a really... He's like a striking viper or praying mantis or something, but he's also he's physically he looks impressive. You know what I mean? I mean, he looks like he could whip somebody's ass.
Right.
You know what I mean? He doesn't look like, you know, somebody's, you know, gardener that got out and got in the wrong place or something, like
Paperboy.
Yeah, like some of the stuff around here. But anyway, I just worked with him last night, and we told the story of him trying different things and finding a body part and working that body part. A lot of these guys get in a hold, and as soon as they come, they get right up out of the hold. Well, it's okay to make them earn that. It's okay to let it go down and work in the hold. It's not a hold you lay there and rest. You don't take a nap. You don't send tweets. You don't have conversations in a hold. You work in a hold. That's what a hold is for. A hold is the heel is grinding punishment. He's applying pressure. He's wearing down the opponent. Your job as a babyface or the one selling is to try to get out of it, try to sell. You're in pain. You need to relate that story to the fans. So we did that last night and told that little story, and then we topped it off with a running high knee to the face, recoil off the ropes, and I let him give me a body slam.
That was what? We were all popped huge. Like, what?
Well, that was – well, let's face it. It's 370-pound Big Show. It's not 470-pound Big Show.
But still, it's the concept of the Big Show.
The concept of it was is that we told a story where he worked and worked and worked, and we and there was – you know, his finish is that Cobra clutch mm-hmm. slam. Obviously, you can't do that to me because physically I'm just too big.
Right.
So how do we get it to the highest we can for a false finish? So, boom, he did that, did the body slam, and he did great. You know what I mean? It was great for him because I look at what they're doing with him and they're trying to do something with him. Now he's moving to SmackDown. So my job as an older guy, an older veteran, is to see somebody that has the right attitude, that is doing the right things, that's getting a new opportunity. And WWE knows me. Vince knows me. The fans know me. I'm not going to go out and just let anybody do some shit like that. So in one way, I'm kind of giving Jinder a thank you for me. And a respect for me for the hard work that he's putting in, and I see it. You know what I mean? Yeah, I don't have booking control, and you know, I don't do payoffs and all that BS, but I can let him know that in my mind as a locker room veteran, I respect the hard work he's doing, and I see something in him too.
Do you think that Vince will hear about the fact that you...
I surely hope so. Mm-hmm. I surely hope so, and I hope Vince asks me about it tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he says, what was that about? And I'll tell him the truth. I said, look, this kid's working hard. He's got a great look. I like his attitude. He's a go-getter. And I said, his in-ring work is... great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, oh yeah, he zipped some stuff in there. It looks good. It's not stiff. It's snug, but it's not stiff. And I don't mind snug. I prefer snug over, you know, you can't bust a grape.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure. Of course. Especially with you because you're so big. It has
I prefer snug. Plus, snug fires me up and I tighten my workout. When I'm out there working with paper mache, it's very. I look even worse.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I prefer. Like some of my greatest fights have been with Sheamus. Because Sheamus is like wrestling an anvil.
Oof, yeah.
You know what I mean? When Sheamus and I were competing back in the day, we were beating the bloody hell out of each other. But it was good.
Mm-hmm.
It was good.
It's not gonna break your nose or knock your teeth out.
No, it's not going to kill me. It's not going to hurt me.
Right.
So I get punched in the stomach hard or I get whacked across the back hard. You know, big deal. It ain't ballet.
Let's talk about another big guy that you worked with, especially over the last European tour with Strowman. You guys were having great matches, a body slam match with him.
Yeah.
And I think you really helped him out because he has come along so well in the last
Strowman's doing really
6 months or so.
I mean, you know, he comes from a powerlifting background, so he's got explosive DNA as far as he's trained hard. He knows how to be athletic and use his body. He's a hell of an athlete. Now, for us, we have to teach him presence and psychology. And for me with him was just getting him to slow down because sometimes when you're as big and as athletic as he is, he wants to be in a rush. Don't mistake intensity for being in a hurry. Some of these guys think if they're intense, it's 100 things. It's like a machine gun. Okay, if you're a 205 guy, that's impressive. A 205 guy, 100 miles an hour, is a sight to behold. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Aaron Neville, when he's firing up, showing his intensity, or Neville?
Yeah. I can't remember what his first name
Aaron
was.
Neville's a singer, right? Adrian Neville.
Adrian Neville, that's it, right?
Adrian Neville. Yeah, God, I always screw that up. Anyway.
I couldn't even remember the Adrian. He's just Neville now.
Yeah, Neville. There you go. Yeah. I can't screw that up. Yeah. Good. But Neville is great as a heel. He's vicious, and he takes his time, and his intensity is there. And you know those English guys that come from the UK always have that real great way of translating that they enjoy kicking the shit out of you with viciousness.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because they've worked in carnivals. They've worked in small territories. They have that in their gut that they've had to fight before.
It's come across so angry.
It comes across so angry and just despicable. And I love Neville as a heel. He's an amazing 205 guy. I mean, all those guys are I'm becoming huge fans of Swan and TJ's doing great with his gamer character, which at first threw me a little off, but he does some pretty amazing stuff. And you know, Austin Aries and all those guys that are coming along. Actually, the 205 guys I really enjoy watching personally. I really like those guys. But for Braun, with him, it's just getting him to understand how big he is and how explosive he is. Which is something that I went through too, because it's not really a model for us. We can't work like Andre and we can't work like Taker. But Braun definitely is as good an athlete as I was when I started, if not better. You know what I mean? He's a hell of an athlete. I think I was a hell of an athlete for the time, but I think Braun has really gotten his stuff together. He's got a chance to get in the ring and come along slowly and work into it. Where I basically, my first match was Hogan.
Right.
So I was in the fire already.
Main event.
Yeah, it took me a long time to catch up. You know, Braun got some runs in NXT. Then he got some runs working with the Wyatts. And I got to do a lot of...
Doing squash matches.
Yeah, and I got to do a lot of live events on the road with Kane and I, with Braun in the ring. So Kane and I got to work. You know, Glenn's absolutely one of the best ever,
yes,
too. So we got to help him a lot with timing and personal one-on-one instruction that... a lot of big guys don't get. Mm-hmm. So for him, he's in a great place now. I love what they're doing with him. I enjoy the match I had with him on Raw. I think that was a little teaser. I think hopefully down the road before I go out, I'll get to work with him again and do some more fun stuff.
You're talking about that a few times, being like the old guy, quote unquote, and stuff. And I get a sense that you enjoy still being around in the locker room and kind of telling your stories. And
I love the live events. I love the Friday, Saturday, Sunday live event shows. I hate TVs. TVs, I just want to, you know, bash myself in the head with a hammer, because they're just long, useless, time wasting, bullshit days where you sit around all day for some friggin' idea that absolutely sucks. You know,
debating it for hours
and 17,000 inputs, and you know,
yeah,
one or two guys laced up a pair of wrestling boots in their life and know what they're talking about, and the other ones have never laced up a pair and really don't know shit, but for some reason they're telling you what to do. So, you know, and you're just sitting there walking around baffled. Like, we all have that look at TV, we walk around baffled going, well, why are we doing this?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I like the live events. It's not as crazy. There's not as much BS backstage. It's just, you know, just me and the guys, you know. I like that part. That's a part. And I like getting out there and working. Like, I've done a lot of stuff where I just go down, I knock somebody out, and I leave. I hate that. I get it. I'm old and beat up. They're trying to help me out and extend me. But I like getting in the ring. Like, last night, I was very happy last night. I was riding with Luke Gallows, because I ride with Luke and Carl Anderson. And I was riding with Luke last night, and I says, man, that's one of the most fun I've had in a while, because I actually got to get in there and tell a story and work. And that's the thing at heart. Whether you like my character or not, and most of the shit I've done on TV and pay-per-views, I didn't get to pick to do anyway. So don't be mad at me. Be mad at the people that booked this shit. But getting in the ring and actually working, like, I love working.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But, you know, the stuff that's going on now, there's a lot of change going on. There's a lot of new talent for a lot of new opportunities. And I'm okay with that. They should get the TV time. They should get the pay-per-view time. I'm totally fine with that. Just don't make me come to Mondays and I don't have to do anything. That shit pisses me off. You know what I mean? If I'm coming, use me. If I'm not, send me home.
I think one of the things with you is you've been around so long that people forget how good you are.
Oh, God.
You know what
Chris.
I mean? No, seriously, dude. Honestly. Oh, no. Because you mentioned Kane and yourself and Taker. I think the three best big men.
I would agree that Kane and Taker, without a doubt, the two best big men ever. I wouldn't put myself.
Well, I can say that because it's me saying it. I'm saying that you are.
Well,
I think people forget.
Am I going to end up in the lion tamer if I disagree with you here?
No, I'm trying to butter your popcorn so that I can put you in the lion tamer.
Yeah, that's it.
I'm real good.
Yeah,
hey,
you're
buddy.
Putting me over.
You're so good. Now I got an idea for a finish for you.
Yeah, tap out for me real quick, kid.
But I think people forget that, though. You know, there was a phase a couple years ago, they were chanting, "Please retire," you know, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's because you've been here for so long.
Well, I think a lot of that "please retire" stuff too is the fans just really sick of how they were using me on TV.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it's tough. You can't quantify it, but you know, our fans are pretty smart and pretty intelligent about what's going on. Sure, they're entertained, but a lot of times they get stuff in their stomach where it's not that they don't like the person, they just don't like what's being done.
Right.
You know what I mean? Why are you doing this? This is terrible. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And let's be face it too, when they were chanting "please retire," I was a heel. So I'm not one of these heels that likes to get cheered and loved. When I'm a heel, I want you to hate me.
Yeah.
I want you to tell me to retire.
Yeah.
Because it makes my job easier. I go for heat. I don't go to be popular.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think that was the difference then too. But, you know, now, you know, they give me that break off TV for a while. Then they'll reintroduce me. And you know me, I've always been a good hand. Like, if you need me to work John Cena on Monday as a heel, cool. Tuesday, we need you to go across country and wrestle, you know, this guy and be a babyface. Okay, whatever you need. I got it.
But you're valuable because of that, you know?
I think so. I think I stick out in a crowd. And I
think that's the thing, yeah. I have a feeling that Vince is not going to let you go without a fight. You know what I mean?
Well, I don't want to go without a fight by any means, but I think they're, you know, all good things come to an end. I mean, you know, let's face it. I mean, you know, the 5 day a week grind that I've been doing for 23 years, you know, it's enjoyable, but at the same time, I got some personal things that I want to do and other things that I want to pursue. And I know, hopefully when we get to this point, sometime this, you know, year before the year's out, Vince and I will sit down and talk and we'll come to something where we're both extremely happy. I got nothing but good things to say about this place, and I'm thankful for even the hard times, and especially I'm thankful for the great times that I've had here. I mean, you know, I've had a fantastic, lucky career. I got zero to bitch about. You know, for a long time I got paid a lot more money than I was worth. I tried to earn that money in my latter years. I got to work with some of the greatest people and stars this business has ever seen in the past 25 years, 30 years, 40 years, because I was in the ring with Hogan and Savage and Flair and Arn and Luger and Sting and Rude and Henning and Benoit and Eddie and Dean, Perry Saturn. I mean, you know, all the guys that have come, Billy Gunn, Road Dogg, you know, Godfather. I mean, just anybody and everybody. You know what I mean? So I'm thankful for all that. You know, I really am. Like, you know, if you had to sit down and write out a dream experience, you know, I can't do any better than what I've done. You know what
just,
I mean?
Just a couple last questions. You mentioned Savage. What was it like working with Randy? Was
he was intense, man.
Yeah,
he was so intense. That dude was wound tighter than a, you know, an 8 day clock. You know, I remember, God bless him, Ron Reese, who was the Yeti, one of the nicest guys in the world. What, Santa Barbara, California is where he's from.
So laid back.
7'3", taller than me.
Talk like this. Hey, dude.
Oh, hey, man. What's up, buddy?
Hey, dude.
You know, just a real nice guy. When he was the Yeti in WCW, I learned right away with Randy, if you weren't wrestling Randy, don't talk to him. Because I went to the gym with Randy, I hung out on the beach with Randy, but if Randy was wrestling somebody else, f*** off, brother, I'm talking. Like, I mean, I'm working on my match, brother.
You mean at the show?
At the show, him, right? Randy was all about business and intense.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was just wound so tight. So I just ignored Randy at TV. I talked to him after, he was fine. You know what I mean? But at TV, if I wasn't his opponent, I just pretend he didn't exist, you know? And I remember Ron Reese comes up to him and goes, hey, Randy, do I am a mummy? Do I go out with my arms out straight or my arms down at my side? And Randy looks at him and goes, brother, do whatever you think is right and f*** off. Ron comes walking right over to me and goes, wow, he's kind of an asshole, huh? I'm like, dude, it's Randy. What the f*** are you doing bothering him on a pay-per-view? What's wrong with you? And, oh, I want to know what to do. I'm like, I think he told you. Do whatever you think is right.
And f*** off.
And f*** off.
When you worked with him, would he put together everything and tell you what to do?
Yeah, it was really funny. Like, you know, when I first wrestled Randy, he invited me over to his house. We knew we were going to be working together on Nitro, and he invited me over to his house. And completely different. When I worked with Hogan, I went to the Hogan's beach house in Florida. We trained at the gym for a few weeks. I thought we were going to work out and do the match. I'd never had a match before. No, we didn't go to a ring. We went to World Gym. We trained triceps. We went to Three Coin Diner. We ate 12 egg whites and 4 chicken breasts every morning and oatmeal. And we went to the beach and, you know, we got sun on the beach. We had beers on the beach. And at 2:45, he picked up the kids and that was it. We started at 6 in the morning and went to 2:45. We ate, we trained, we went to the beach and had beers. And I'm like, I remember one time on the beach in Clearwater, he goes, come here, brother, lock up with me. And he locked up with me, and he moved me around the beach. He goes, all right, brother, just listen to me. And that was it.
Wow, yeah, yeah.
That was literally it. And when I look back now, after 23, 24 years in the business, and think about how big I was, how strong I was, how green I was.
How green you were, yeah.
Hogan was insane to put that kind of pressure on me. But he had faith, and he was so cool in the ring. I remember at one point in the match, I had him in the corner, and I didn't even have any corner offense. I didn't have a chop. I didn't have knees like Kevin. I didn't have back elbows. I didn't have anything. So he's in the corner, and I look at him, and I got that deer in the headlight look, which, you know, to me, I'm thinking it's like forever. But Hogan picked up on it right away, and he grabs my wrist with both hands and starts fighting with it. And this is, no, brother, don't choke me. And then, then he put my hand on his throat. I was like, yeah, I can choke him. I can do this. So then I choked him in the corner until we get out of it, and I headbutted. But he was just so calm.
He was great to work with.
So calm and so relaxed and just, And how many years did he work with big guys and some guys that couldn't work, right. You know what I mean? And he A to Z all over the world, even when he was running in Japan years before, you know, working with Andre. So, I mean, he knew exactly what to do with me, how to build me, mm-hmm. what pace to run, that main event pace, which, you know, there's a big difference between your mid-card pace and your main event pace.
Yes.
There's a different timing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I never understood that when I first started. I thought every match, But as you get older, you realize, okay, there's a different timing. There's a different way mm-hmm. to do things. That's why this match is more spectacular, because the timing's different.
Right. Yeah.
The showcase, the layout, the psychology, it's all different. So the fact that Hogan did that, and Randy was different because I went from working with Hogan, and my second run was with Randy. So I go to Randy, and we go to his house, and he hands me a yellow legal pad and a pencil. He's got a yellow legal pad and a pencil, and we're writing out the match.
Wow.
And I'm like, oh, God. Okay. You know, it was the exact
opposite.
Completely night and different. And then that's why Randy was so intense, because Randy wanted to know what he was doing. He wanted to know what you were doing. He wanted to know where you were standing, what you were going to do here. He didn't want surprises.
Mm.
You know, and that was Randy's thing. But he understood the business, understood his character, understood right away, no, we should do this, no, you should do that. So he was leading, but he wanted it blueprinted out, obviously, because, you know, I was green as grass. He wasn't trusting my ass to go out there and think on my own. He gave me a blueprint, and you do this and only this, mm-hmm. and you do that and you do only that. You know what I mean? And that was you know. But I get it. Everybody's different.
That was his thing. Okay, so last question. You've done a lot of great stuff here. What's the worst angle you ever had?
The worst angle.
Is there one that sticks out in your head or something you just thought was awful?
Oh, God. There's been a lot of stuff I've done that was just absolutely horrendous. But I think for me personally, the worst thing I've ever done is when Vince made me do the Baby New Year thing. Because it was just so freaking awkward.
What did he have you do?
He had me in a freaking diaper with a New Year hat and wanted me dancing. And all I could think of, it was like some billionaire masturbating video where he's got some fat guy, and you can imagine like Vince in a dark room looking out on a big screen going, yeah, now shit in the diaper, you fat bastard, shit in the diaper, that's it. It was just so uncomfortable. All I could feel like is like, I sold my soul, I have to do this. Like Howie the cameraman and Brian the lighting guys, Kapoor was producing it.
Oh, my gosh.
And everybody's just going, I know, Big Show. This is just, you know, Vince, I want him to dance, damn it. Let him dance. I'm like, do you want me to shit in a diaper, too? Like, what? Like,
did Vince pitch this to you?
Oh, Vince made me do it, absolutely. Because, you know me. You know, remember when Vince sucked me in the purple when I was tagging with you?
He sucked you in the purple?
Sucked me in the purple.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, you got to be fat like some kind of cartoon dinosaur. You should wear purple. Like, okay, so I'm fat now. Thanks, buddy. You know what I mean? So I got fat. So he says, well, you're a fat Baby New Year. Maybe you should lose some weight. You know? So,
my gosh.
But that's the kind of relationship I've had with him. Like, you know, he's getting fat. I need to motivate him. Let me embarrass him.
Yeah, stick
you know what I mean?
Speedo diaper.
The diaper worked. The purple gear wasn't so bad. I made it. I wore it for a while. I got out of it. But the diaper is like, okay, yeah, I need to make a change.
And here you are now, a giant with abs.
And now here I am now, a giant with abs. Yes. Yeah, so that insane, crazy Vincent Kennedy McMahon actually does know more than I do. He's actually a smart man. Believe it or not, he's a brilliant individual.
That's right.
That's funny. Yeah, that literally is the most awkward thing I've done. None of this stuff with Boss Man or diving on the casket.
Oh, that was a good one, yeah.
Or, you know, none of that stuff has ever been. We did one thing where I was making out with Lita. It was one thing that Lita and I always talk about it. Like, Lita was trying to manipulate me backstage. You know how hot Lita is. I mean, mm-hmm. like, you know, Lita's still to this day is so beautiful. Like, the girl hasn't aged.
Right.
She's so beautiful. And I remember she's on my lap and we're doing this thing. And I'm like, oh, shit, I'm making out with Lita. And in the back of your mind, you're like, oh, I'm going to get in trouble. But, wow, I'm making out with Lita. You know, and I'm trying to make sure I don't put my hands anywhere appropriately. But in the back of your mind, you really want to put your hands somewhere inappropriately. So then, and Lita's doing, and we did this great professional thing, and I was so proud of myself. I said, yeah, I've grown up. I was very professional, because that was really intense for me, because, you know, Lita was really hot. Then Vince comes in and says, well, we need, and Bruce Prichard was like, well, we need to close. Vince goes, well, pimps up, hose down. And Lita and I looked at each other like, what the f*** was that? Like, it just was. That was the line out he wanted. So I have this woman who is so freaking hot, which is, in a real world, it would be, I would never put myself in that position because I could never say no. But I'm going to look at her and say, pimps up, hoes down. I'm like, well, okay, he missed the boat on that one. That was just, that is just totally not the thing to say to Lita. I'm sorry. That's something you say to, you know, anybody but Lita.
Right.
You know what I mean? I just remember going, you know, it's one of those things where you get told that in the back of your mind, you hear, wah, wah, wah. So that's the moral of this Jericho's podcast. Pimps up. Hose down.
Always a great time talking to Big Show, man. He's my big little brother. He's so knowledgeable about the business. Great guy to be around. He gives back. I love hearing all of his stories. So thanks to my fave tag team partner of all time. And you know we'll have him back on at some point for sure. But before we close it up, speaking of coming back on, let's see what crazy product the Team Tiger Awesome crew have cooked up to sell you this week.
Hey, dudes. Are you tired of restaurants that make you feel bad about yourself because they give you plates and forks and stuff?
Yeah, baby!
Do you want to eat like a real American? Well, come to Buckets!
Buckets!
Buckets is the only chain restaurant in America where your food is served entirely in buckets!
Read my lips! No new taxes!
We got buckets of ribs, burgers, fries, cheese, and two flavors of ranch.
Hot or wet. Buckets.
So come to Buckets today. We're located next to every old mall in town. And tell them Team Tiger Awesome sent you.
And I'm truly.
To find out more about Buckets, check out the Team Tiger Awesome show every Sunday on the Jericho Network.
Stupid idiot.
Yeah, I think I like the Paul Giamatti trading cards better, but that can only come from the twisted minds of Team Tiger Awesome, one of my favorite group of guys to have on this show and have their own show, which is why you need to listen to them every Sunday on the Jericho Network on Podcast One. Go subscribe at Apple Podcasts and be sure to leave a 5-star rating and review, and go ahead and do the same for all the shows in the Jericho Network. Rock Talk with Mitch LaFon, new episodes every Monday. He's got an episode up there with an interview he did with Gene Simmons of Kiss when he was like 10 years old. Killing the Town with Storm and Cyrus. New episodes every Tuesday. Great episode this week. Cyrus is live in Japan. Tom Lawler, filthy Tom Lawler from UFC. And he gives his review on Extreme Rules. He's also a pro wrestler. And Lance Storm talks about the time he almost broke his neck. The Raven Effect. New episodes every Monday. Still going through the origins of his wrestling career in Portland, the beginning. And man, you got to listen to Raven's show if you like the psychology of wrestling. He's so smart. And of course, the flagship show, Keep It at 100 with Conan. On Thursdays, this week, Vince Russo makes a fool of himself, and Johnny Mondo is cool as he always is. Check that out. Beyond the Darkness, talking all things paranormal every Monday through Friday, scaring the poopski out of you 5 days a week. And the fine folks from Beyond the Darkness also have another podcast, True Crime Tuesdays. You get this exclusively at patreon.com. Sign up now, and just for $5 a month, you get a new episode every Tuesday with no ads. These episodes are completely commercial-free. Get to Patreon.com and sign up for True Crime Tuesdays. And wow, and the two Words of Jericho shows they did in Ireland were fantastic. Both of them were stone cold sellouts. Lots of laughs. Great stories were told. I got another one coming up in my hometown of Winnipeg with special guests of Lance Storm and Cyrus. That'll be August 25th at the Club Regent Event Center. Tickets available at Ticketmaster now. Go check that out, man. We had so much fun at the Words of Jericho. I think I'm going to do a lot more of these in the future. Just me telling great stories from my career, ridiculous stories, and having a few laughs, making fun of myself, and entertaining, which is what I do best. So shout out to that event. A shout out to all the great Talk is Jericho sponsors. You can find them at podcastone.com. Just click on the Killer Deals button at the top of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. All right, thanks to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. You're getting 20% off the DDP Yoga app and all DDPY related merch. Of course, A&E talking about Alone, and then True Car. Go check it out for a cheaper, quicker car buying experience. Thanks for listening. Keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next. And on Friday, the ambassador for heavy metal on satellite radio, the man behind Sirius XM's Liquid Metal channel, the guy who introduced Metallica at the Big Four show in New York, at the personal request of James Hetfield, talking about Jose Mangan. If you're in the heavy metal world, you know how influential Jose is. He's like a modern-day Eddie Trunk, and man, what a great guy. He's got some great rock and roll heavy metal stories about basically taking over the entire heavy metal division on XM radio. Stories about Megadeth, Metallica, Pantera, Anthrax, Anthrax, King, Howard Stern, Dimebag Darrell, James Hetfield, Dave Mustaine, so many great heavy metal stories. Jose Mangan is going to be here, one of the most hyper, excited, genuinely good guys I've ever met. He's going to be here on Friday. Talk all things Octane, all things liquid metal, all things Sirius XM heavy metal. And they've been playing the crap out of Judas. Thank you guys for that. Once again, thanks for everybody who came and rocked with us at Download. Thanks for everybody who listened today. And we'll see you on Friday with Jose Mangan. But in the meantime, in the between time, stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy!
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.
Daddy, where do babies come from?
Honey?
Mommy went to the store.
Oh, well, you see, there's a mommy and a daddy, right?
Right.
And see, when they call Geico, they could save a bunch of money on car insurance.
Oh, really? And that makes them happy?
Yes, that makes them very happy.
That's good.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we could have this talk, Sunshine.
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
It's your last chance to get great holiday savings at Guitar Center. Like a Simmons SD550 electronic drum kit, just $399. Add your choice of AKG K52 headphones or a Shure SM48 mic, each just $39. Plus, the newest and hottest guitars, drums, keys, and more. Exclusive gear you can't get anywhere else. Special financing, lessons for the beginner on your list, and gift cards. The perfect present for every musician. So hurry in and find your sound at Guitar Center.